Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 343. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about bamboo trains, ancient temples, and genocide memorials as we go to Cambodia. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you, and all of them are bad news, good news stories. The first one, bad news, there was a plane crash earlier this week in northern Mexico, and a 727 crashed to the floor of the desert. Its landing gear crumpled, its occupants thrown around like rag dolls, but the good news was no one was hurt. And the reason for that is, although it was a real jetliner, there were no people on board. It was crashed for a new Discovery Channel program, Curiosity, which will air Sunday at 9 p.m. One of the things they were studying is where's the safest place to be in an airplane when it crashes, and the answer is the rear. In the second news item, the good news was that American Airlines added some additional legroom to their flights this week. Unfortunately, they added them while the flight was in the air, as twice within a week, airline seats became unattached, with the people tilting over backwards into the laps of the people behind them. No one can remember it happening once, let alone twice, within a week. And the final news story, the good news is the TSA is hiring again. The bad news is they've gotten a little grief for one of their most recent hires, which was a defrocked priest who was kicked out for molesting young girls and is now doing pat-downs. I suspect that situation won't continue. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Noah Letterman, who's come to us to talk to us about Cambodia. And Noah is also coming to us from somewhereorbust.com. Noah, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Why did you go to Cambodia?
I always had a very strong interest in Cambodia. I started doing research for a book where my central character was a survivor of the Cambodian genocide. So after just pouring through the literature on those years, I really wanted to see it firsthand.
And I'll be honest with everybody, this is actually the second time Noah and I are recording this, and we're going to do this one with possibly a little less emphasis on the genocide than we did in the first version. But obviously that's something that you had also mentioned the first time, that there's a personal part of that story that you related to.
Yeah. Like I said, I was researching the Cambodian genocide. And even before that, I had been writing about the Holocaust for quite a few years. So I definitely connect with the recent tragedy in Cambodia. And it's a country that's been through a lot in the last 30, 40 years, but it's also one of the most beautiful countries I've ever been to. And the people are some of the most optimistic, friendly people. So it was quite a relief to see.
Excellent. If we had, say, 2 weeks to spend in Cambodia, what itinerary would you recommend?
So most people who see Cambodia leave with one complaint, that they did not spend enough time there. They kind of spend a few days in Siem Reap and a few days in Phnom Penh, which are two areas that you really must see. But I would also suggest spending at least a few days in the south along the Gulf of Thailand. My favorite place to go there was a town called Kep, and another city that is in between Phnom Penh and Siem Reap, a place called Battambang. So just to go through the order, you could do Kep, Phnom Penh, Battambang, and then Siem Reap, or obviously if you're coming from Thailand, you could do it in the reverse order.
Excellent. And let's not cover it in that order, because let's cover Siem Reap first, because we've talked about that before on the show in episode 127. It was the first show we did on Cambodia, and you've listened to that episode, as I recall.
Yeah.
So we're talking about, and I'm going to use the wrong terminology here, Angkor Wat, which is really, I understand, just one temple, but the complex there is why people go to Siem Reap.
Siem Reap is this massive, massive complex. Actually, Siem Reap is the town, mm-hmm. but about 6 or so miles away is this ancient complex of maybe 50 major temples, and they are just incredible to see in all different parts of the day. So we started off at Angkor Wat at about 4 in the morning.
Oh my
gosh.
Up. Okay.
Yeah, 4:30, our tuk-tuk driver picked us up. Obviously, we had arranged it beforehand. It's the best way to do it, because a tuk-tuk pretty much will cost you about $15 for the day. We had this guy from 4:30 in the morning till about 6 p.m. at night. And a really nice guy, took us all over. I'll get to all the sites. But we started off in Angkor Wat for the sunrise. And there's just a whole host of different routes you can take. Because we had our tuk-tuk driver, Chan is his name, we decided we might as well go all the way to the furthest temple, which is a place called Bante Shrai. And Bante Shrai is made of these like pink stones, very ornate, probably one of the least visited major temples because it's so far off the trek.
You hint there at the size of the complex that you wouldn't want to walk to the furthest temple. Do you know roughly how far it is from one side to the other?
Oh, yeah.
It's so miles, as I recall.
Probably, yeah, 20-something miles or kilometers, but definitely it's not a walk because, I mean, you could walk it, but you wouldn't see much in that day. From the Angkor Wat, which is closest to Siem Reap, mm-hmm. to Bante Shrai, which is furthest, it's definitely a marathon each way.
Okay.
So Bante Shrai is a beautiful, beautiful temple.
And why did you start at 4:30 in the morning? I'm curious of that too.
To get to Angkor Wat for the sunrise.
Okay.
So first of all, this is not strange. This is not out of the ordinary. You've never seen this many people before sunrise until you've come to Angkor Wat. I have a picture of everyone looking at the sunrise, and it looks like people watching some sort of Colosseum event, because you have all these ancient stones behind them, and they're just gathered in masses. So it's quite spectacular to see the sunrise, and it's quite absurd to see all the people. But it's certainly something to wake up for once if you're there for 3 days.
And you'd seen pictures of Angkor Wat. You'd learned a lot about it, I'm sure, before you went. But what surprised you about the place?
Actually, I didn't learn very much about Angkor Wat.
Oh,
it wasn't what I had been researching when mm-hmm. I was reading about Cambodia. What surprised me was just how massive it was and how the structures, these have been built almost 1,000 years ago, some 1,000 years ago, how they just withstood all of the weathering. There's one place there called Bayon. And Bayon, you could see the faces on these towers, and they're chiseled out into the stone so well, and probably 900 years have gone by, 800 years, and they're still preserved quite well. The one thing that I did read about was a place called Ta Prohm, and Ta Prohm is the tree temple, mm-hmm. or they call it the tree temple. So all this time, I'd never actually thought to look it up for myself, just to see a picture, because I kind of wanted to be surprised when I saw it. But I always thought that there were these temples inside trees. But it's even more spectacular than that. There are these trees, they call them spung trees, and they're growing on top of the temples. And the roots are about the size of elephant legs, and they're just crushing the temple. They're just reaching down, strangling all the sculptures, wrapping around everything as if it's just like this octopus that had settled down on top of the stones. Mm-hmm. And it's really just incredibly impressive. And Taprom is very touristy, very busy. So it's kind of hard to get a snapshot of you without 1,000 other people in the background. But if you are looking for a temple similar to Taprom, there's a place called Priya Khan and Ta Sam, and they're both a little further along the circuit. And each one has the same sort of spung tree, which I believe is a type of fig tree that is sitting on top of the temple. And the way the roots are coming down is just really beautiful. And this interesting juxtaposition between nature and what man created. And it's just one of the guides there told me that in a few years, they're going to have to cut down the tree. Well, a few hundred years, probably. They're going to have to cut down the tree because it's going to die. And then when it dies, it's going to fall and risk destroying what's left of the temple. So it's kind of this battle between the tree and the temple. But some of my favorite things about the Angkor Wat area, which have nothing to do with Angkor Wat, are the things that are alive there. So there's very friendly monkeys.
Now, I've heard that phrased in different ways other than very friendly.
So they're very friendly monkeys who can be a bit aggressive. It depends what, I guess, your disposition towards them. I have a few videos of this little girl who was trying to sell me bananas. And she was kind of following along with me and just reiterating, monkey like banana, buy banana, feed the monkey, over and over again. And she had a way with the monkeys. This is probably not very PETA friendly, but she would shake the monkeys by the head. And they kind of like, they liked her. They definitely gravitated toward her. While there were other tourists who were there, and the monkeys took a bit of advantage of them. But they're definitely worth seeing. They're fun little creatures, very curious. They can be aggressive, and if you let them, they will climb right up you and take your glasses or anything that is not kind of bolted down.
That's the part that I've heard, yeah.
We spent an hour just staring at them with fascination. And then the other thing that's really great about Angkor Wat area are the kids. It's a little sad because the kids are sent out to sell things and they're all very adorable. So it's very easy for them to convince tourists to buy the postcards that they're trying to sell. But I've traveled a lot in Southeast Asia and there's a lot of people who want you to buy and they treat it as if it's your obligation sometimes. And tourists and travelers, they get a little frustrated with the constant barrage of please buy from me. But in Cambodia, they're very creative and funny. Everywhere you go, the kids will count up to 10 in about 5 or 6 different languages to show you all the postcards that they have. And if you tell them you're from America, they're able to tell you all the capitals of the states. Their technique is refreshing. So it was definitely a fun place to travel around.
Excellent. Now, we could probably do a whole show just on that area, but you had mentioned 3 other areas, and I want to get to those also. So you mentioned Kep, which was your favorite of the towns along the ocean.
Right. So in Kep, there's a few things to do there. It is a quiet town in the countryside, so it's not very lively. It's a great access point to a place called Rabbit Island. And Rabbit Island is just across the waterway, about 20-minute boat ride, and it's this remote little island with a few huts and a few little restaurants. It's just really a great place to relax. I'm not big on beaches that I can't surf, so sitting on Rabbit Island, I was a little worried that I would get a bit antsy, but they have a bunch of hammocks strung up between trees. They have these bamboo pallets laid out so you could use as lounges. And there's really only about like 40 people who were there when we were there. and it's a great place to spend the day. And if you are not too turned off by the cottages that are there, I would even suggest spending the night. But if you do go back to Kep, which, by the way, is just a $9 round trip ticket from your hotel by tuk-tuk and then by boat, there's some great food at the crab market. And the crab market of Kep is along the water, so you have great views. And every place pretty much serves the same seafood.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a crab market per se, but that's what they call it. It's all sorts of seafood. But the crab at this one place, Kim Lee's, we chose that place because it was the most crowded. But the crab there was really phenomenal. It was probably a bit more expensive than some of the other spots, but we're talking $10 for this huge dish of crab. And it was spice and garnish with this the pepper that is sold at the plantation just down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a good spot. Another really worthwhile thing to do if you have the time in Kep is to go out to the Kirisila Caves. And what's interesting about the Kirisila Caves, aside from just being this Buddhist temple inside a cave, is that this was the same area where in the 1970s, the Khmer Rouge was keeping prisoners. And then there's a second cave that we had to convince our guide to take us to. It was out in this pasture, which you wouldn't have even noticed it, but we had convinced him enough that that was something we wanted to see. And behind all this bramble and brush, there was a killing cave. So it's not uncommon in some of these areas where you think you're looking at just some beautiful network of caves or this beautiful field. And it so happens that 40 years ago, it was used for more nefarious purposes.
Okay. And then you also mentioned Padambang. Okay.
It's a city, really. It's between Siem Reap and Phnom Penh. And when we arrived in Battambang, we met this man, Soka. And Soka was a tuk-tuk driver. He was the only one who spoke English. Because normally all the tuk-tuk drivers go after the boss and ask you for your business. So we were interested in having someone who spoke English show us around. So Soka got the job.
And how common did you find English in Cambodia? I'm assuming you don't speak the Cambodian language.
No, I don't speak Khmer. Most people spoke enough English. I didn't find it that difficult to communicate. Anyone who spoke a little spoke enough. So, yeah, Soka spoke English very well. And he got the job the next day, and he took us around. The first place he took us was what's called the Bamboo Trains. And the Bamboo Trains are quite interesting. It's basically the epitome of Cambodian ingenuity. And what they are is, after the Khmer Rouge left the country in shambles, obviously one of the things that wasn't really working were the rail lines. And what the Cambodian people did is they took these two axles that fit perfectly onto the track. They took a bamboo pallet, very similar to the ones that I was laying on in Rabbit Island, and they kind of jerry-rigged a lawnmower motor to the back of them. And just like that, they were using the rail lines again. And my wife and I, we were on one of these bamboo cars. Our driver was certainly, I guess you could classify him as insane. He just didn't believe in the idea of slowing down. And it's a phenomenal ride. You're holding on to nothing for dear life. It goes at about 30 miles an hour, I would say. So maybe not for dear life, but it's definitely, it's not like a roller coaster where you're strapped in and you're just seeing the countryside. And the driver, we were going, and a truck, there's one place where cars can cross the tracks, and you would think that's where kind of the drivers would slow down, but he just kept going. The truck was the one who luckily backed up, but otherwise I think our honeymoon would have gotten cut short.
You actually didn't mention that this was your honeymoon so far.
We did a 10-week trip through Southeast Asia, and Cambodia was definitely both of our favorite stops.
Well, and I almost mentioned when you were in Kep and you were doing kind of the lazy beach day, it sounded like this was the rest day from a long trip where you're trying to see quite a lot of stuff. I think you did this first time you got into the country, which isn't necessarily where most of us are looking for the down day. But if you've already just done Vietnam, for instance, that was probably a nice break.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it was a much needed break after all the craziness of Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh City. It was a nice little reward. But even still, you could pack in a lot into Kep if you head out to Rabbit Island for the day and then go to the crab market. In Battam Bang, when we were on the bamboo trains, one of the most interesting things about them is as you are going down the line, there's not two rail lines. So you're going away from the city. Other tourists who are on the bamboo trains are coming toward the city. So there's the only thing that you do is to create bamboo trains that disassemble. So the rule on the tracks is whoever has the least amount of bamboo trains behind them, they're the ones to disassemble. So quite often we were getting off, taking the bamboo pallet off, lifting up these quite heavy axles, dropping them off onto the side of the track, hoping they didn't roll down into some lake or into the bramble. And then we just would quickly reassemble. And the whole thing, every time you would break the bamboo train apart, it would be about 2 minutes. So they had it down to a science. And then you wind up in this town called, this little village called Ostrolov. All the kids run after you to try to convince you to take their tour to either the rice factory or the brick factory. One of the kids actually was really funny. He had a clay rectangle in his hand and he showed me. And in the front, there was another rectangle carved into it. And then on the back was his Apple logo. So he had created a little clay iPhone for himself. But yeah, it's definitely worth the trip just to see how these bamboo trains operate. And you really get a new appreciation for your country's infrastructure, where the gaps in the track don't cause you to lose your hearing almost.
Anything else about Battam Bang before we get to Phnom Penh?
Yeah, so one other thing that we did in Battam Bang was we visited a place called Nam Sam Po. And Nam Sam Po is both beautiful and also a bit sad. It's this mountain, not a huge mountain, but one that you could hike up quite easily or take a motorbike up. And it just provides the most spectacular views of the country around the area. But it's also a place where they have these caves. And just like in Kep, these were killing caves. So you could go down into one of them. And inside this one cave, they have a stupa, which becomes quite common in Cambodia. You just need to know where to look. That's filled with bones.
And we say a stupa, I'm assuming that people know what that is, but we're talking about the kind of pyramid bell-shaped Buddhist temple.
Right. Basically, it's just there to house skulls. And it's quite sad, and it becomes very common, not around the country, but there's a few hundred of them. And when we were down there, there was an old man who was making bracelets and giving out incense for Buddhists to come pray. And right next to that, it's just a very tragic reminder of what was going on 40 years ago. But Nam Sam Po does offer a taste of present day Cambodia, which is its beauty, and past Cambodia, or the recent past, which is the sad history from 1975 to 1979 when the Khmer Rouge was in power.
Okay. And then you also got to Phnom Penh.
There's a few things to do in the city. One of the best things to do is there's a little night market along the river, and that's kind of the area where you would want to stay, somewhere along the river. So the night market just had good little snacks.
Love the night markets.
Yeah, and this one wasn't huge, and mm-hmm. It didn't have a ton of variety, which not many of them do, but this one was quite small. But the food station was pretty unique because you would get your appetizer sampling that you wanted, and then there would be this whole floor space that was designated for sitting and eating, and it's a great place for Cambodians who are like night picnicking and travelers who just want to be in that scene. So that's really cool. And then the other thing that's really nice on the waterfront is just at night, everybody's out playing soccer on the cobblestone or the asphalt paths. And people are on the road selling all sorts of treats, like you could pick up some crickets, fried crickets, or other fried insects, which were quite delicious in Thailand. I didn't get to sample them in Cambodia, but I'm guessing they're of the same quality. And so that's really like the fun stuff to do. It is beautiful along the river. And then there's also the things that are kind of mandatory for most travelers to see. It's a place called S21 or Tuol Slang, which is where the citizens of Cambodia who lived in Phnom Penh were brought. And it really is one of the few places that's still intact and tells the story of the genocide.
And I get the impression from you, if I only had time for one place to go to learn about that time period, that this might be the one place in the whole country.
Right. So if you want a very succinct and concise lesson without traveling around too much, Phnom Penh is it. Between S21, where you see there's four schoolhouses.
And this was an elementary school or something before it turned into something more gruesome.
Right. Each schoolhouse had about three levels outside the schoolhouse. Now it's just one building has this, but they were all covered in like a net of barbed wire so people couldn't escape or jump to end the torture. And they were kept in these little shoddily built brick cells to be tortured. And it's quite interesting to read the testimonies that were forced out of the people, admitting to being spies, even though they had no idea what the CIA and KGB were. And inside S21, if you get there soon, you'll actually be able to meet two of the seven people out of 20,000 who survived. They're the last two still alive. There were seven in total. And they're there pretty much on, I don't know if a daily basis, but they were both there when we visited. And they're giving out, they're selling their books. And you could meet these men who really went through hell.
Well, and we should say that the reason why people ended up there, I mean, we haven't talked about that as we talked about this so far, but this listing audience of the amateur traveler tends to be a fairly well-educated audience. Most people have a college degree or are working on a college degree, and for that alone, you could end up here.
Right. Most of the people who were killed during that time were urbanites or any educated people, artists, anyone who spoke out against the Khmer Rouge or Pol Pot or who were suspected of any of these things. Ironically enough, during the bombings along the Cambodian border, people had to flee into the cities. And then when the Khmer Rouge came to power, those same people were considered city people instead of village people, which they had been all their lives. And the only reason they had left was to flee the bombing. One of the things that you should definitely do if you make it to S21, though, is to get a guide. It's a few dollars. Most of them had experienced the war, had experienced the genocide, and they really can clarify a lot of the things that were going on and personalize it, certainly, and illuminate everything that was going on during that time. So after we had visited S21, our tuk-tuk driver, a guy named Tree, had taken us to a place called Chungak. And Chungak is maybe even harder to look at because it really feels like a beautiful park. Obviously, you know why you're there, but then you look down onto the earth and the rain had washed away some bone fragments and some cloth that was part of a mass grave. So there's all of these mass graves that have been revealed over the years and a few areas where you can see these bone fragments and even other areas that are more gruesome where they murdered infants. But there's this incredibly huge stupa that was built in the center. And inside there's about 9,000 skulls and femurs and other bones that belong to about 9,000 of the 20,000 people that were murdered there. And right across the street is actually a place for the disabled. It's a nice place to sit and reflect afterward. But when we were there, there were all of these young men who were playing volleyball in the back, and the volleyball net was on the ground. And the reason being was because they had all lost their legs, or one leg or two legs, to mines, which still affect the entire country today. There's still areas that are heavily mined, areas that no tourist would visit, because these were the areas where the Khmer Rouge had set up after they had lost power. Mm-hmm. It's still a constant reminder that this is a beautiful country with a past worth learning about.
And before we leave Phnom Penh and get into some of our general questions, you weren't impressed necessarily with the royal palace in Cambodia, but you also had some recommendations that somebody should know before they go there.
If you do happen to go to the royal palace, I would suggest, first of all, making sure that you have a shirt that covers your shoulders. And if you're a female, definitely pants or a really, really long skirt, because people who were paying the cover to get in were then turned away and forced to either lose their ticket or pay for clothing. Oh, and then another point that I had forgot to mention about Kep, there is no ATM in Kep. So you want to make sure that you go in with money. And most places do not take credit cards. So.
Okay. One of the questions that we ask usually on the show is, how familiar was the place? When did you feel closest to home, and when did you feel furthest from home?
Naturally, you feel very close to home in Cambodia if you're an American, because the currency is the American dollar. Hmm. So it's actually quite funny, because I would go to the ATM and take out, say, $300, and it would, unlike in America, it would come out in all $100 bills.
Okay.
And if you took out this money at night when the bank was closed, then you were stuck with $100 bills. And interestingly enough, nobody in Cambodia can change $100 bills. So you felt closest to home when you saw the money, and then you felt furthest from home when you realized your $100 bill really had no value because you could never change it. So that was, I guess, my furthest from home and closest to home all in one.
Now, we've obviously talked about some very serious things in terms of Cambodia, and the main reason that drew you there was some of this dark history. But one thing that made you laugh and say, only in Cambodia?
One of the things that was constantly happening to me was I would meet the kids that were trying to sell things, and they were very friendly, and I would always wind up somehow, I don't know if it was me instigating or them, but we'd always end up in some sort of challenge. So one girl, I had to play rock, paper, scissors to to get her to stop trying to sell me bracelets. Another girl challenged me to about 15 games of tic-tac-toe in the sand. One little boy sung a song to me about why I should purchase his bananas. And these kids really were the spirit of Cambodia.
Interesting. Best picture you took, prettiest spot in all of Cambodia?
First of all, I should mention that the best pictures I took were really the funniest pictures, and they kind of lacked beauty, and they were just full of humor. There's some sort of craze in Cambodia, or at least this is where all of Angry Birds merchandise is being shipped. But every single kid and adult in Cambodia own some sort of Angry Birds t-shirt, hat, backpack. So I have a lot of Angry Birds pictures, which was actually a recent post of mine, the Angry Birds fashion show, if you will. So I did enjoy the humorous pictures in Cambodia, but probably the most beautiful picture, and it probably just has to do with the effort that went into it, was just watching the sunrise over Angkor Wat. That was really spectacular, and these acorn-shaped towers at the top, like silhouettes in this really beautiful sky that's kind of changing very quickly. So it's quite beautiful.
Excellent. Before I get to my last two questions, anything else that you would give people as a tip? If you're going to Cambodia, you've got to do what, see what?
If it's a trip to Southeast Asia and Cambodia is one of your stopping points, you need to say, I'm going to spend more time than I originally had planned, because every single person I had met, their one regret was that they didn't spend enough time. And it sounds like the cliche thing that somebody would say when they're talking about this topic or being on a show talking about a particular country, but it was really the thing I had heard over and over again. So definitely making sure that you have enough time to see everything. And I think really what made the country so spectacular was the people. Get to know the people. My favorite moments were really just hiring a tuk-tuk driver for the day, inviting them out to lunch and breakfast and wherever we went. It cost just a few more dollars to sit there and hear their stories. They have really interesting lives. They all have been through so much and really have persevered through a country that has seen tough times, but they're quite impressive folks. And you just learn all sorts of great things. Like our one tuk-tuk driver was always carsick. So, you know, it's kind of...
Oh, wow, that seems like a bad occupation.
Yeah. So we wouldn't have learned that if we didn't take them out. So, yeah, I would definitely suggest spend as much time as you can allot to Cambodia and get to know the people and take out your tuk-tuk drivers.
Excellent. Last two questions. Finish this sentence. You really know you're in Cambodia when what?
When you're trying to order a beer, which is called... There's two beers. There's one... Well, there's more than two, but there's one beer called Angkor, which is A-N-G-K-O-R. Mm-hmm. And then there's another beer called Angkor, which spelled and looks and has the symbols of the thing that keeps a boat in place.
Okay.
So... You really know you're in Cambodia when you try when you're trying to order Angkor beer, the one that keeps the boat in place, and they keep bringing you Angkor because they don't pronounce Angkor with the CH the way we pronounce it. So they pronounce it Anchor. So the company Angkor, which they would pronounce Anchor, is really doing poor business because they keep losing out to a lot of people ordering Angkor beers.
And if you had to summarize Cambodia in three words, what three words would you use?
I would say friendly. The people are extraordinarily that. It is also a beautiful country. The scenery, the nature, and the ancient architecture. And it's really just an optimistic place. Having gone through years of civil war and genocide, you would think this would just make people very tough, very rigid, and they're the opposite of that. They're walking around smiling, very friendly people who just want to engage you in conversation and learn about what your life is like as well.
And Noah, where can we read more about your travels?
You could read more about my travels on my blog, which is somewhereorbust.com, and I tweet at Somewhere or Bust as well, and I'm also on Facebook and Stumble Upon and YouTube, all at Somewhere or Bust.
And when does your novel come out?
If anyone's listening, that's a question that you folks out there might help me answer.
Okay, but we can learn more about that, I assume, at your blog.
Yeah, you can learn more about the novel and my other works on the blog, and yeah.
Excellent. Noah, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
In news of the community, I heard from Brad, who left a comment on the episode about the South Island of New Zealand recently, and Brad said this: Eric and Chris, thanks for a very well done episode. I did almost the exact same trip about 8 years ago, although in reverse order. We arrived in Picton and then drove down to Blenheim to check out a couple of wineries and then around through Abel Tasman, etc. You mentioned microbrews. We did stop in Greymouth for the Montieth Brewery tour and tasting. Here in the States, you'd never get that close to the open kettles. We could have easily added our own flavorings if so desired. And I'm not sure if they were short-staffed, but they led us into the tasting room
and just showed us where the glasses were and left. Good thing I'm not much of a beer drinker, or that could have gotten out of hand. We didn't get to both Milford and Doubtful, but instead opted for a splurge, flying from Te Anu to the little airport at Milford Sound, then boarding the boat for the regular tour with all the bus tourists, then a small van ride back to Te Anu. The flight takes you over the famous Milford Track, which is, in a word, drop-dead gorgeous. Hey, that's one word, right? Some of your other guests have done that. And the driver of the van kept asking, well, what do you guys want to see on the way back? We took several little detours and hikes that got us back well after dark. Much better than a 50-passenger bus ordeal from Queenstown. One other thing that we did that was well worth the detour was a quick trip to Stewart Island, just south of Invercargill. The boat to get there is nicknamed the Vomit Comet, so bring your Dramamine. There's a lot of great treks there, plus the Ulva Bird Sanctuary on one of the nearby islands. All predators have been removed, so the birds have flourished, and is supposedly pretty close to what the rest of the South Island used to be like. One annoyance to watch out for are the sandflies, especially on the west side. Bring your repellent. Their bites itched more than a mozzie and lasted much longer. I was saddened to know that Christchurch is still reeling from the earthquake a few years back. My thoughts and good wishes go out to the people so impacted by the tragedy. We had 5 weeks to see all of New Zealand and split 2 weeks in the north and 3 weeks in the south. We could have easily spent five on each, but given the time we had, it was a good split. Thanks again. It was fun to relive the trip the last couple of days during my drive to work on the right side of the road. Thanks, Brad, so much. I'm not sure if there's going to be an episode of The Amateur Traveler next week. I will be in South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina, to be more specific, and we'll be talking about Charleston, South Carolina soon on the show, so stay tuned for that. It's October, and so that means it's time again for the Podcast Awards. If you like this show and are enjoying it, please go to podcastawards.com and nominate it or vote for it for a podcast award. Stitcher Smart Radio is also having a podcast awards. If you listen to that, if you use that application, you might want to vote there as well. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, do what Brad did and leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. You can also join the Facebook community, facebook.com/amateurtraveler, or follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. If you would, please review us on iTunes or give us a thumbs up on Stitcher Smart Radio on your smartphone. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.